Bloomberg years. It is an attack on suburbanization, hyper-gentrification, and all that led up to it. A plea for the soul of the city. This book is not a nostalgia trip, but it is about history. Mostly, it's about the city in the 2000s. Life in the new Gilded Age, now that the rambunctious New York we knew has breathed out its death rattle. Reports of New York's death are not greatly exaggerated, though some would argue otherwise, insisting that the city's undomesticated heart still beats in far-off corners of Brooklyn and the Bronx, that you'll find a faint pulse in whitewashed Manhattan if you look hard enough. These insistent optimists, deep in denial, point to any trace of the old town and say, "There is New York." Yes, there it is, but it's only a remnant, a lone survivor from an endangered species rapidly vanishing. Maybe it's that dive bar with the Ramones on the jukebox, or that bookshop with a cat lounging atop the stacks, or the rare sighting of a transgender outlaw walking some West Village street in platform heels. It's like finding a polar bear sweating on her melting chunk of ice, and then denying that the world is cooked because, hey, there's a polar bear. Others quote from the long history of doomsayers, the many writers who declared the city dead. The complaint that the real soul of Manhattan has already expired is a long-standing one, perhaps as old as a 19th-century Knickerbocker's pining for a mythological Dutch past, writes Brian Waterman in The Cambridge Companion to the Literature of New York. That's true. But has the complaint ever been made by so many, so relentlessly, and with such passionate certainty as it is today, and with so much evidence to back it up? Novelist Caleb Carr called the massive change to the 21st century city a regrettable, soul-sucking transformation. Patti Smith told us to find a new city because New York has closed itself off to the young and the struggling. David Byrne wrote an essay on the cultural death of New York, saying, "Most of Manhattan and many parts of Brooklyn are virtual walled communities, pleasure domes for the rich." Essayist David Rakoff observed how the town's vibrancy and authenticity have been replaced by a culture-free, high-end retail clusterfuck of luxury condo buildings. Responding to all this, the counter-argument goes, "But it's safer. The streets are clean. And we have great restaurants." In The New Yorker, Adam Gopnik summed it up, "New York is safer and richer, but less like itself. An old lover who has gone for a facelift and come out looking like no one in particular. The wrinkles are gone, but so is the face. For the first time in Manhattan's history, it has no bohemian frontier." I could go on with pages of similar quotes, all from the past decade or so, a chorus of voices from literature, art, new media, journalism, all making the same argument. At the beginning of the 21st century, the city changed in what felt like an instant, and the change wasn't good. In short, New York has lost its soul. The place is dead. Okay, dead might be hyperbolic. Is dying a better word? How about comatose, awaiting a miraculous revival? Maybe this shift is just another phase in the city's long and ever-changing evolution. But who ever thought New York would have a soulless period? This book, like my blog of the same name, is both a historic record and a personal document. I can't disentangle the two. As a historic record, it is filled with facts, many gleaned from newspapers, books, magazines, and blogs, as well as firsthand interviews and my own experiences. I've done my best to be accurate, but singular truth is a slippery thing when recounting the city's daily dramas. As a personal document, this book is filled with metaphor and conjecture. It is an emotionally inflected account from someone who lived the story and was affected by the plot. Let's not delude ourselves with fantasies of objectivity. How can anyone be objective about New York? It's not a souvenir snow globe or a designer coffee table. It's a living thing.